And good afternoon. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
And today we're going to be talking to Andres Soto, who is with an organizer with the Communities for a Better Environment in Benicia, California, the Bay Area. And they have the same concerns we have about these trains hauling crude. And later in the show, we will be talking to Ahab Latoya of Gaza Ark, and that's, I think it's GazaArk.org. Am I right?
GazaArk.org.
Yeah, and they have up-to-date information for us about the bombings that have taken place in Gaza. We hope also to we're going to have Edith Piaf is going to sing. We hope we're put in the request. Edith Piaf to sing the Marseillaise. Today is the anniversary of the storming of the Bastille. I know you were all there in spirit, and it was a great moment in history. And she, you remember, is called Sparrow, from the Little Sparrow from France, and she was very enthusiastic, a great singer. And by the way, our timing couldn't be better for this interview we want to do with Andres Soto, because today's Toronto Star headline says that there's a problem between the city of Windsor and the rail people. The rail organizations, Big Rail, let's call them. Big Rail wants secret agreements with cities. And Windsor, they seem to be out of step. That would be because it's a working class city, and they're. People in working-class cities are all from Missouri. They got to be shown. The headline says, Windsor challenges railways over confidentiality agreement. Basically, the rail wants says, well, okay, well, you give us somebody from your community that we trust. We will share with him. And then he won't share that with anybody else. This, and it's called and it's a Nixon doctrine. If you remember, Nixon said, you go on a need-to-know basis. He never told anybody. People who worked for him, he never told them anything. And he said, and they said, why? And he said, well, it's a need-to-know. If you need to know, I'll tell you. So that's sort of the operating principle of Big Rail. And I'm sure that the same is practiced in Richmond. Of course, one of the reasons we are talking about this today is that this is close to the anniversary of the Lac-Mégantic explosion killing 47 Canadians, it's a year later, and basically people remain dissatisfied, as you would expect they would at this point. They've had a scorched center of their town, and it's uncertain what's going to happen. If you read today's account, there's money around, but if you look at it closely, it doesn't sound like a lot of money. $60 million to help restart local businesses or to get them to leave town. You wonder, there's again need to know. How much are we going to learn about? What are the little details involved in an arrangement of that type? And, of course, our friend Andres Soto in Richmond will have some thoughts about that, I'm sure, because they have refineries. A lot of refineries in the area. And these decisions made in that industry are multi-million dollar decisions, and they would prefer the Nixon doctrine, that why should you tell the local people? For one thing, they'll tell each other, And then if there's an election, they'll probably vote for somebody who says, tell us more. And that might not happen. The organization Andres Soto is with is Communities for a Better Environment. And you can find that on the web. It's full of information. If you're living in Toronto, if you're living in Megantic, if you're living somewhere near the tar sands, if you read that, go to that site, you will see a lot of recognizable matters and issues. We have these new terms, Phil, and you can. And by the way, Phil Conlon here, who is modestly an expert, actually, because he worked in
radio. Thanks for the modest, right? I worked for those guys. And,
worked for them.
So I got a lifetime dose of the BS that they can shovel, right?
Yeah. You were with the unions who... companies are no more anxious to share what they know with unions than they are.
No, that's true. That's true. I remember one incident back in the 70s when there was an extreme danger in the rail yard in Agent Court where I worked at the time. Because the workers in the place had contacts, we knew that every fire department in the area was on the highest alert. And so we went to I was a lowly shop steward. I went to the boss and said, well, maybe you should send us all home. Because there was no health and safety legislation in those days. And the boss said, no, we've got some production to get out.
So work until we find out if it's dangerous.
Right. And I told him, I said, you know, if the yard blows up, you'll be just as dead as the rest of us. He didn't like that. He told me to go back to my desk.
Yes. So therefore, by just definition, you were deader than he was.
Yeah.
We want to remember the Mississauga.
Well, of course. The Mississauga thing could have been much worse than Lac-Mégantic. It happened to be that when that train blew up, it was in a little rural oasis between two heavily built-up areas, 5 miles on either side of where that accident happened, and you might have had hundreds, if not 1,000 people dead.
It's a phrase that journalists love, by the way.
Hundreds, perhaps thousands. Okay.
Hundreds, perhaps thousands. But now, let's remember something, that we discovered a mayor that during that event, Hazel McCallion, and her role in that was so outstanding and heroic, and she says, Hazel McCallion lives with both feet on the ground. And by the way, she's not overly ambitious. She didn't want to be a member of parliament. She didn't want to be a mayor of Mississauga. And because of the way she handled that, and because of the nature of the crisis, she was permanently electable.
Yes.
People said,
to this day.
To this day, we want somebody who we can trust. And they had that confidence. And politicians hate to hear about this, but wartime leaders always get the same thing. De Gaulle and Roosevelt and these people. If you were the guy and you were running the operation in war, or you're the most celebrated general, you can't be defeated, because it's like people have a total identification with, because they thought they might lose their life, and or they thought they might be defeated, and they identify with that individual, rightly or wrongly, by the way. I'm not saying they were right. Rightly or wrongly, that individual was there when it all went down. And if you prevailed or if you survived, you feel you owe something. Mm. And I didn't know the name Hazel McCallion when that happened, but after
well,
that,
neither did the railway. But they learned it,
and we all learned a lot about her. I mean, she was quite a remarkable.
She's still the mayor.
Really remarkable individual. But that, let's all remember, that was a rail accident, as Phil points out. That could have really clobbered a bunch of people.
And let me tell you that there were some significant reforms that were made concerning the documentation of trains and what is on them afterwards. And this, of course, the railroads opposed. They said it's not necessary. We know what we're doing. But actually, the federal government at that time brought in regulations requiring the railroads to identify all of the dangerous commodities that were on trains. So at least the rail crew and the employees of the railway knew the makeup of the train and what was where. And not only that, they insisted that you couldn't mix all this stuff together, in and out and stuff like that. You had to have a gap of 5 rail cars between the engine and anything that could burn. Right. So those were real reforms which we got as a result of Mississauga.
Well, thanks, Phil Conlon. And speaking of people who have experienced these matters, we are now joined by Andres Soto. He is an organizer with the Communities for a Better Environment. Are you there, Mr. Soto?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, thanks an awful lot for talking to us. We in Canada share with you a new awareness and a new concern about this these phenomena, such things as, well, starting with the tar sands, that's our side of the border.
Right. Right.
And then we have this new, I think it's a new term for most people, crude by rail. And then,
particularly the Bakken shale crude that's been fracked in North Dakota.
That's another new word that has really excited people. Fracking, that's become a new way of talking to each one another. Frack you, or we've been fracked.
right.
And you have really had this problem in Richmond, but you've been on top of this. Your community has been addressing this because I guess you have something called the refinery corridor. Could you tell us some about Richmond and about this topic?
Sure. Richmond is on the east side of the San Francisco Bay, just north of Oakland and Berkeley. And in Richmond, we have the Chevron Richmond Refinery, which is the largest refinery, oil refinery in California, and the single largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the entire state of California. Mm-hmm. But it's just the first of a string of refineries that line the shoreline. About 7 miles north is the town of Rodeo. They have a Phillips 66 refinery. Then in the town of Martinez, about 5 miles east of that, there's a Shell refinery and a Tesoro refinery. And then right across the Carquinez Straits from Martinez is the town of Benicia, where there's a Valero refinery. So all five of the Northern California refineries are, you know, right situated next to each other, four of them in Contra Costa County and one in Solano County. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we refer to as the refinery corridor. Mm-hmm. And the impact of that has been that historically we have the highest rates of asthma, the highest rates of a variety of cancers, as well as other autoimmune diseases that have plagued our communities and our population for generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, as the oil industry moves from the easy to acquire crude oils, now we're moving into extreme crude. And so the tar sands and the Bakken crude both represent some of the most difficult to utilize crude oils and are considered extreme crude oils that the industry is now reduced to having to extract and try to process. And there's a number of problems, not just emissions and pollution, but there's also the issue of the volatility of the explosions from these trains when they derail, such as the Lac Megantic explosion last July 6th over there in Quebec, up there in your side of the world, your side of the continent. And so we're trying to prevent that kind of disaster from happening in our community. So in fact, the Kinder Morgan, the nation's largest pipeline and the prime movers behind the Keystone XL pipeline, have already started to bring in this Bakken crude into our city of Richmond via the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad. And this Friday, in fact, we've already filed a lawsuit, and we're going to court this Friday seeking injunctive relief to stop that activity. Because we believe they did it in violation of the California Environmental Quality Act, because the air district, the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, issued a permit for them to convert from bringing in ethanol to bringing in this Bakken crude, and did not require a new public review process. And we believe that's a violation of state law, so we sued them, and we go to court on Friday.
By the way, these things always turn out to be rather drug out. But are you, like, you're going to court Friday? What sort of a time frame would you be in and getting them to reveal what they've done or know?
Well, we already know what they've done. They issued the permit and they're bringing it in. They're bringing in 2 100 car trains twice a week. They transfer it into oil trucks, tanker trucks that then deliver it to the Tesoro refinery out in Martinez, and they've been doing it since September of last year. And so what we're seeking to do is to stop that activity, saying that they violated the law and that they need to comply with the law and start all over again by having a public review process. And under the California Environmental Quality Act, they would be required to have what's known as a environmental impact report. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, can take months or even years to develop. And so, you know, we're seeking to stop it there. But all these other refineries nearby also have projects. And in Benicia, which is where I live, we're currently trying to stop a crude by rail project there being promoted by the Valero refinery in partnership with the Union Pacific Railway. Mm-hmm. And so we just had our first planning commission meeting the last week on Thursday to deal with the environmental impact report they created. And so this is the time for public comment to basically shoot holes in their report. Then, you know, once
by the way, you do have a, your community is alert and they're demanding, aren't they? I mean, you've been having meetings where they've had to extend them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, over here we've been dealing with the issue of environmental justice, like I said, for a number of generations, and particularly in Richmond, people have been organizing around this issue for over 30 years. And so there is a heightened awareness because we consider ourselves ground zero, not only for our individual, you know, the harm that has been done to our community individually, but also because of the impact that all of the emissions that are being spewed out by our refineries on the climate. You know, we're very conscious of the battle to fight climate change and to change the fossil fuel industry and move towards renewables. And so it's both a case of self-interest to protect our own community health and safety, but it's also more of a global interest, you know, thinking globally but acting locally to try to clean up the environment so that, you know, our children and grandchildren can have somewhere to live.
Yeah. We're speaking to Andres Soto in Benicia, California. He's the organizer with the Communities for a Better Environment. You can find that, by the way, on the internet. Andres, my impression is that the typically of a big operation, some of the, it's Chevron and others that are involved there, they tend to treat communities as though they are the rich uncle doing the community a favor. How big a favor are they doing for the local community? They hire everybody in town and give them all good paying jobs, et cetera?
Oh, absolutely not. The Chevron Richmond Refinery,
not.
less than 5% of their workforce are local Richmond residents.
Less than 5%? How could that? Yeah. Can't the city insist that they hire more from locally? Can't there?
No, all they can do is set goals and you know, try to achieve those goals. But the reality is, what they end up doing is buying off loyalty and buying silence of nonprofit groups in the community by giving them funding for their programs.
For all their programs except the employment one.
Right. And, you know, in each of the last two local city council elections, Chevron has spent about $1.5 million in each election. And in Sacramento, in order to lobby the state capitol in California, they, in 2013, they spent $2.5 million. So, you know, they've spent more than 50%. The equivalent of more than 50% of what they do to lobby the whole state, they spent in the local Richmond City Council election trying to defeat progressive candidates.
They love the Richmond City Council. It's just Richmond they don't like.
Well, no, they like some of the city council members who are their willing servants, but they hate other city council members who are part of the Richmond Progressive Alliance who stand up to Chevron.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to mention. You have your mayor, or the mayor of Richmond, is a Green Party person, is he not?
Yeah, Gail McLaughlin is a member of the Richmond Progressive Alliance and is a registered Green Party person. And the city of Richmond, believe it or not, has the highest per capita Democratic Party registration of any city in the Bay Area. So at 77% Democrat, we have a higher percentage of Democrats than San Francisco, Berkeley, or Oakland. We have more
than the other liberals.
More the declined estates than Republicans, Greens, American Independent, Peace and Freedom combined.
Well, let's get into the question there about when you said that they employ 5% or less of the Richmond population. What is the ethnic makeup of that population, the demographics?
Well, the city of Richmond is about 103,000 people. The single largest group are Latinos, who are primarily of Mexican heritage, but a significant population of Central Americans and a growing population of Latin America, South Americans, particularly Peruvians and some Brazilians. But we also have a significant African American population at about 24%. Latinos are about 40%. And Euro Americans are at about close to 30%. We have about 15% Asian, who are a mixture of Southeast Asian folks from primarily Laos, but also a growing Chinese population.
And they're all engaging this issue.
Yeah, the whole city is aware of this. It's the largest taxpayer in the city, even though because of the fire, according to the county assessor, every city in Contra Costa County had their property values assessed upward, except for the city of Richmond, and the assessor directly said it was attributable to the fire and the loss of revenue and the loss of production capacity at the refinery. And so this year, the city of Richmond is facing a deficit because of Chevron's crimes. And Chevron is on criminal probation as a result of the violations of law that led to the fire in August 6, 2012.
Again, this is Andre Soto. He's in Benicia, California. He's the organizer with Communities for a Better Environment, which has a great website, by the way. Andres, I want to ask you about something that's going on here that's relevant, I believe, to your work. The city of Windsor, which is just across from Detroit, the headline in today's Toronto Star says Windsor challenges railways over a confidentiality agreement. And basically, our concern is we found out because of Lac-Mégantic, there's a lot of volatile, dangerous materials, which, by the way, were improperly labeled, we learned, moving through these communities right now as we speak. But the rail business doesn't want to share with the cities and are fighting them because the cities feel they have a responsibility to disclose these matters and to make sure they have community approval. How much are you allowed to know about these rail cars, for example? Where are you on that issue?
Yeah, it's a similar situation where because of the growing public opposition to the crude by rail phenomena we're talking about, the railways here in the United States are similarly trying to prohibit state and local governments from being informed as to what is actually in those rail cars. All the rail cars, for example, will have these placards on them that indicate, they're called hazardous material placards. It's like a diamond-shaped placard. And if it says 1267 on that placard, you know it's crude oil. But it doesn't tell you what kind of crude oil. And there's literally thousands of different types of crude oil.
Yeah, we have now they ought to call it Dakota crude, and people will know that's fracked.
Right. Right.
Apparently, the chemicals that go into that is what makes it more explosive or dangerous.
Right, because they have to, it's hydraulic fracturing where they're pumping liquid into the rock and breaking up the rock in order to release the oil and natural gas. And of course in the tar sands they're destroying the boreal forest, stripping it, and then literally they're mining the stuff out of the ground, and they actually have to pre-refine it up there to take the sand out of the tar sands, and then they have to dilute that tar primarily with benzene, which is it's in and of itself a highly volatile and explosive chemical, in order to transport it into the rail cars. And we've seen several disasters involving the tar sands, too. You know, like Whiting, Indiana, about 2 months ago, that, you know, spilt into Lake Michigan, which is the water source for, you know, 7 million people.
Yeah.
And so,
and of course, the poor people in Detroit aren't even able to get water in the first place. It's getting to be kind of a turning into a dystopia before our eyes. Which raises the matter, and I want to say, this is Andres Soto, Communities for a Better Environment. You are making the fight for renewable energy, are you not? I mean, you're taking on that issue.
Yeah, in fact, last week's Richmond Planning Commission meeting, where they voted on Chevron's proposed project to, as they call it, modernize it, when in fact what it is, it's a dirty crude expansion project. They were able to actually deny Chevron's proposal and instead voted to accept an alternative project called Alternative 11. But a key feature of it is the installation of 8 megawatts of solar panel, you know, energy development to power processes within the refinery. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's because we forced it upon them through, you know, the will of the Planning Commission, who are appointees of our mayor. Now, we expect Chevron to appeal that to the City Council, where it's a more dicey situation. Like I said, we have 2 people who are on our side, 2 people who are on Chevron's side, and 3 people who are at play in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we have to go next week to defend the decision of the Planning Commission to help, you know, turn the direction of not only our community, but the world's, the economy and the world's atmosphere around.
Yeah. And now, and apropos of that, you had, I think it was a march maybe a week ago. It's called the Healing March. Is that right?
Where
people
take a
walk together and talk about the environment and target the places where you have a problem.
Yeah, this past Saturday was the 4th leg of what we call Connect the Dots Healing March. Local Native American leaders, Penny Opal Plant, who represents Idle No More, which is the First Nations movement up there in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
She connected the dots, so there was one march per month. And so 4 months ago, there was a march from Pittsburgh, California to Martinez, California, because Pittsburgh, even though they don't have a refinery, a major rail oil operation was planned for that, called Westpac, and we've been able to push back and put that project on hold. Okay. And then there was a second leg a month later from Martinez across the bridge, across the straits to Benicia, where the Valero refinery is. And then 2 months ago, they had a march from Benicia to Rodeo, where the Phillips 66 refinery is. And then this past Saturday was the last leg, and that was Rodeo to Richmond, where the Chevron refinery is, as well as the Kinder Morgan crude by rail operation.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear about that. I think Lac Megantic needs Idle No More. That would be a great – they probably are,
in fact,
they probably are talking to each other.
Yeah, earlier this year in February – we had a woman named Marilene Savard who came out from Lac Megantic to represent those people, and she spoke at three different community forums we had in Pittsburgh, Martinez, and in Richmond. And so I also host a radio program on KPFA, and she was able to come on my program and tell the story of Lac Megantic.
You see, refinery people and the Lac Megantic people are closer to one another than Toronto is. Once you have a crisis, people get to know each other.
You look out for you know, people in the same boat as you.
Yeah, we're speaking to Andres Soto, Communities for a Better Environment. And before we let you go, you mentioned you do a regular program at KPFA. You had a morning program, now in the afternoon. Is your work on these on this issue affecting your broadcasting, and how does it look for you for your program?
Well, you know, my program was one of the few programs that really highlighted a lot of the work that's been going on in Richmond, and especially highlighting the work against the refinery expansions and the crude by rail issue. And unfortunately, it got caught in a political football kind of situation, and they took us out of the prime time morning drive time and cut the program down from an hour to a half hour. But we're still fighting to restore it. In fact, later on this early evening, I'm going to be going to the San Francisco Labor Council, where they've already adopted a resolution to support the restoration of the morning mix. And some of the people who, you know, fought to get it off the air are challenging that resolution. So I'm going to go there to defend it.
Wow.
So the battle continues.
Yeah, I'll bet it's a it was a good hour, and I'll bet it's a good half hour. Andres Soto, we really appreciate the time you you take to talk to us, and good luck with your work.
Well, thank you so much for having me on and sharing our story, and also want to thank Ann Garrison for helping to set it up.
Absolutely. Ann Garrison, a real pro. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, thanks a lot. Take okay. care, and, you know, buona fortuna.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yeah, and by the way, we want to thank Ann, too. Ann is a journalist who listeners to our show will know her work. She's a Bay Area a writer and also a broadcaster, and she's on top of all these issues. And we look forward, by the way, to talking to her sometime in the near future, because there's a lot of work around the struggle to release the poor woman who was a candidate for president in Rwanda and for standing up ended up in prison. And the world is ignoring the case, but Ann Garrison is one of the reasons that the world still knows about that case. And we're all hoping that, by the way, that that campaign will be brought to a successful conclusion soon.